Dan and Jose for many, many years. And it is a blessing to have both of them here today to talk to us about what God has been doing through their life and ministry. And we may have time, as they, however you all want to arrange your own time, to ask questions or to, you know, to find out a little bit more. But we know these two men in the Lord, you know, the work that they have done for so many years. And we really glorify God because of your good works. And we are grateful to just to be a small part of it. So at this time, we decided age before beauty. And Dan said, that's fine. But he wasn't sure where we were going to find anybody that was good looking to come after him. So, but we'll trust Jose to be able to do that. But brother Dan, thank you so much.
All right. It's nice to see everyone out, and try to be brief and to the point. And we'll also give you a chance to ask questions if you'd like to. My wife and I and our children spent a great deal of time in Central and South America and Mexico. Mexico, by the way, technically is a part of North America, if you're wondering, so we covered the bases. Most of our time was spent in Central America, a total of 25 years living in Latin America. I taught for 15 years at Abilene Christian University, during which time I always took groups of students to Latin America for programs that lasted between 2 and 6 weeks, usually twice a year. But we had quite a few experiences there that I don't have time to tell you about, but if you just insist on knowing them, I talk real well about Latin America when I have a good breakfast or a good dinner. Just remember that if you want to talk to me. During the time we spent there, of course, I occupied my time in teaching, contacting people, and establishing new works, new churches around the areas where we lived. When I got older and needed to leave Latin America, we were living in Toluca, Mexico, until the year 2004. And at that time, I had a heart attack. And we lived in Toluca, is almost 9,000 feet elevation. I didn't mean to have an attack, it just came on me anyway. But I went to a cardiologist and he examined me and he said, you need to get out of this this altitude. I said, okay, so a few days later we were on our way to Fort Worth, Texas. And before I left and a little bit after I arrived in Fort Worth, I consulted with people who knew me best, people with whom I'd worked in Central America and South America and Mexico, both nationals and gringo missionaries, and asked them, so, here's my situation now. What do you think I ought to do with my time? And it was uncanny how that the Mexican and Guatemalan and Honduran and Argentine and Uruguayan and Chilean people that I contacted were thinking just exactly alike. And they said, one of the things you ought to do is to develop materials for Bible study here in the among the churches in Latin America. You see, we deal with people there who didn't grow up in Bible, going to Sunday school, Bible class like we have. Most of the people with whom we deal are first generation Christians. Most of them do not have a single idea about what the Bible is all about. It's not because they're a bunch of ignoramuses, it's because they've been taught by the traditional church that they ought not to get too involved with the Bible. In fact, I don't know how many of the brothers and sisters down there have told me the same story. They said that the priest would tell them, look, you do not need to read the Bible. Leave it alone because you couldn't possibly understand it. It takes an experienced person such as I, the priest would say, someone who has studied and is able to decipher what the Bible says. So if you read it, you'll start talking to others about it, and you'll misrepresent it because you won't know what it's all about, and whatever you say will be wrong, and that is an affront to God. So do you want to offend God? No. Don't read the Bible then. That was the logic. And I've had dozens of people in Central and South America and Mexico tell me that same story. Don't read the Bible because you can't understand it. Leave it to the professionals. If you read it and you start talking about it to others, you'll misrepresent it. You'll cause them to stumble. It'll be an affront to God. Leave it alone. So you're dealing with a bunch of people that have never, ever had any, felt any urge, really, to read the Bible. Now, once they do, they get really excited about it. What a lot of us missionaries do down in Central and South America, in a new church, when we find out that the people are not acquainted with the Bible, not at all, you say, turn to the book of Hebrews, they don't have a clue. And maybe one or two people in the congregation that do know will run around and help them find Hebrews. You know, it'll take 20 minutes for everyone to find Hebrews. And then you change to 2 Peter, and they have to go through the whole thing again. So what we'd do, we'd go down to the Bible Society and buy a stack of Bibles just alike. Pass them out and say, turn to page 1,124. And they knew how to do that. That's the only way you could really get an orderly Bible study going. Well, I got to thinking on that and other things, and I thought, well, let's get acquainted with the Bible. And so I set about writing a survey of the complete Bible, all the way from Genesis to maps, not leaving out anything, and also including some lessons on the intertestament period. But I found out that those who knew something about the Bible knew zilch about what happened between Malachi and Matthew. So I wrote a special lesson on that. And it's designed for anyone who is interested and learning something more about the Bible, especially for new members of churches that can't turn loose and go to a Bible college. They have responsibilities at home. They don't want to be full-time preachers, but they do want to be effective teachers in the congregations. And so it's designed for small groups. The materials are complete. A person acts as a coordinator with the small group. But the coordinator doesn't have to do anything but read his lesson because all the work is already done. They have a manual for the students. What you do is you interact with the Bible constantly. You have the Bible over here, you have your manual here, and you read the Bible and you're interacting with it and answering the questions in the manual. I don't know how many letters I have received from students enrolled in this program, particularly in Central America and South America, that have said things like this. You know, this is the first time I've tried to read the Bible and I don't go to sleep because we have a constant interaction with it. And thank you for the course and on like that. And a lot of them will say, you know, Brother Dan, I was told I could never understand the Bible, but that's just not right. I understand a lot more about the Bible now. I know I don't understand everything, but there's a lot I do understand. And it opens a new world for them that they thought was closed to them forever. And they get very excited about it. But they want good, solid guidance on the thing. So the basic course that I've written is called Panorama Biblico. I know you're interested in the Spanish name because you all want to speak that language. That's going to be the official language of heaven. Did you know that? That's why Paul wrote to Rome and said, I've got to go to Spain. He wanted to learn the official language before he went to heaven. And I'm sure he did. But that course, like I said, covers the entire Bible. You can cover the entire Bible in less than a year, allowing for vacations. You know, just take one calendar year, you go through the whole thing. Now, to date, we don't have absolute accurate records because not everyone sends in the information we ask them to send. But to date, there have been at least 5,600 or 700 people enrolled in that course in Mexico and Central and South America. And the retention rate of those who enrolled, those who completed, is just absolutely phenomenal. We have kept track of those. I have the coordinators who correspond with me. How many started it, how many finished it. And the retention rate is well over 80% of those who enrolled, which is rather phenomenal. So let me tell you this story, because this is the best one. They don't all turn out this way. The idea behind it, we tell them, you know, take this course, and then if you think that it's something that is good for others, become a coordinator and help guide another group through, okay? I was invited to go to a city in northern Venezuela. Name of the city is Barquisimeto. Be sure to remember all these names, because there's going to be a test. Barquisimeto, Venezuela. And a good brother there asked me to come down and preach a evangelistic campaign. He said, by the way, we want to know about the course you've written. So I said, no, don't want you knowing about my course. So I said, oh, you bet. Went down there, and I went over with Brother Rojas, who is the full-time preacher there for a nice-sized congregation. And he said, well, I'm going to select some people here that I know want to do some serious study. A serious study, you've got to do your lesson before you come to class. The class meets once a week for 2 hours. It takes about 3 hours preparation before you come. If you don't do your lesson before you come, you're not allowed to come in class. So they do it. And then you go over the lesson together in class, you take a test on it at the end of the class. So there's some work involved. It pays off big time. And he started with 20 students. He selected 20 men in the congregation. And they went through the course. They went through it at a faster pace than the recommended one. We said, now here is a calendar for you, how to get through it in a calendar year and have time for vacation. You can do it more slowly if you wish, or more rapidly if you wish. They wish to do it more rapidly, and they zip through it. And Brother Rojas called me and said, Dan, we've already finished the course. Is it all right if we go back and do it again? No, you can't do that. I said, sure. He said, the reason we want to go back and do it again is that all these 20 men want to be coordinators. And they said, you know, it'd be good for us to go through this whole thing again. We'd feel prepared to guide other groups. I said, okay. So out of that 20, the next year, I signed about 162 certificates of completion for those who were in the classes and the groups of those 20. The year after that, I signed 540 certificates, because a bunch of them wanted to be coordinators. The first thing you know, that whole area there in Barquisimeto had hundreds of people enrolled in that. Now, it doesn't all the projects don't turn out that rosy, but that one is one I really like to tell. And everywhere I know where they've tried it, they've liked it. And they grow in knowledge of the word. I was telling Stan earlier that I tricked the first class I put through that. I had a group of Mexican brothers and sisters. Had more brothers and sisters, but had a few good sisters in there. And after they went through the entire course and thought they were totally through with it, well, I contacted them. I said, we're going to meet at our house next Saturday for a debriefing session on the course. So we got together and we sat there and talked. And, okay, tell me your impressions of the course. What are the strengths and the weaknesses? And they had some good feedback for me. And after we'd talked about an hour or so, I said, okay, now we're going to have our postre. Postre, as all of you know, as Spanish speakers, means dessert. And they also, those students knew that I used it to describe a major test. I said, okay, we're going to have a pulse today. They said, pulse today, moan, groan, moan, groan. They said, we've already finished that course. I said, I know that. This has nothing to do with your grade. You've already received your grade. You're going to get your certificates. This is just to let me know and let you know how much you've retained. I said, that's what's important. Have you really taken anything away from this session? I said, besides that, it's just a little bitty test. It's only 500 questions. Oh, moan. Oh, groan. Oh, I said, we'll take it in segments. We'll do 100 at a time. We'll have a little rest, and have some refreshments and all. If anyone faints, we'll drag them outside and hope someone revises them. But I said, let's do this. They did it. 500 questions, general knowledge, people, places, and events, and the general themes of each book. I wanted them to know what the main themes of each book are. You know, say, well, let's read about Elijah and his contest with the priests on Mount Carmel. Well, where's that? You know, I want people to know where that is and go and take a look at it. Well, what are the main themes of each book? That's part of that test. Well, they got through it, and I graded it, and I was blown away. One student missed only two questions out of the 500. The lowest grade of that group was 82% correct. That was the lowest grade. Well, I got to thinking, this test is too easy. And I was known at ACU as the old mean guy giving hard tests. What's going on here? This must be too easy. So I took it to my colleagues who were teaching in an extension of Sunset School of Preaching in Toluca, Mexico. I took it to them. They'd all been through Sunset. Some of them also had a graduate degree at ACU. I said, I want you guys to take this test. And the guy that's director, Jody Jones, he said, Dan, I've heard about that test. I don't want to take that test. I said, no, nobody's going to embarrass anyone. Just take it. And I said, I want to know if you think that it's too easy. And the three guys, Jody Jones and John Dice and Barry Galindo, who's from California, by the way, you might know some of these people, they all took it and they said, this is not too easy. No, 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 no. They said, we're embarrassed. We don't know any more than we do about the general knowledge of the Bible. Well, it is effective. It has really helped give people confidence. We can know something about the Bible. And they've said, give us some more. So now I'm in the business of writing some advanced and deeper studies of different textual studies and thematic studies with the same format. They're going to second and third level on that. And it looks good. They seem to be learning, and they like it, and they want more. The people that want to study the Bible, like I say, they can't just stop and go enroll in Abilene Christian or Sunset School of Preaching or anything else. They've got to keep their jobs. They've got to take care of their families, but they want to learn. And I found that once they get a taste of learning, they can learn something after being told for so many years they couldn't. And they can understand that just whets their appetite for more and more. So I busy myself in writing and answering their questions and corresponding with them and training the coordinators. Now, this whole system is built on volunteerism. The coordinators are not paid. I don't receive a personal salary from any church. Uncle Sam sends me Social Security every month, and I appreciate that. And I have a few little investments that help. But your money and everyone else's money that goes into the fund there is handled for me by the brethren there at the North Davis Church of Christ in Arlington, Texas. Every cent of that is used for travel and for producing the materials. Now, I have a wonderful group of volunteers right there in the Metroplex, the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Pedro Villa, another guy from Colombia that is very, very capable, very intelligent, and a real great teacher. And a guy from Chile, Rodrigo Rebolledo, a young man who married a gringuita, and he's living there in Arlington now. And they, when they have time off, they'll travel to Central and South America, and all I do is help them. Never have had to pay the complete airfare. They usually have some money to do it, but help them with their airfare going down there to train the coordinators how to use the course. These people are very, very familiar with the course. They know how to train the coordinators to get them going. They correspond with them and encourage them. So your money is used to get that course in the hands of people and to follow up on how they're doing. Tell what the truth and okay, all right. I office by invitation of the Bible League International, and the World Bible Translation Center is a subsidiary now of Bible League International. And their mission is to distribute Bibles all over the world. And especially, they give Bibles to missionaries and preachers and church leaders throughout the world who ask for them. They said, we need Bibles, and they send them Bibles. And they do that in several languages. When we went to Fort Worth, I was contacted after being there a short time. They said, Dan, we'd like to do this. And we'd like to provide you an office here at the Translation Center. And we'll provide some limited secretarial help. We'll provide you a telephone and business machines and all that good stuff. And we'd like for you to act as a consultant for us, especially in the Spanish version that we are developing. I said, okay, that sounds pretty good. I didn't have to pay rent for an office or anything. And I liked talking about the Spanish version anyway. So that's the kind of arrangement we have. And just recently, a few months back, the high mucky mucks of the Bible League International came around and said, Dan, we would like for you to write an introduction in Spanish to every book in the Bible. We want it to be concise, to the point, and instructive. Why would you want it to be all those things? And they said, we want to print that up in the book and distribute it where we've distributed Bibles in Central and South America, in Mexico. A lot of those people there have the Bibles, but they haven't had a chance to do much study, and said an introduction to each book will give them a perspective of what that book is about, and we'd like to do that. So we're going to print it in a separate book. But what we want to do, and this is the carrot they held out in front of me, and we will put your name in there as the author of this book, but also contact information and inform them if you wish further and deeper study of the word. Contact this man who offers courses designed for small groups in these areas. So what they said, I believe, is true. Their exact words were, once they get these books in their hand with your name and address and that information, that your students will jump from thousands to tens of thousands. And I believe that to be right. They said, we want to help you get that course throughout Latin America. They believe very strongly in the course, and so they said, let's do it this way. And it sounds like a good plan to me. And I said, you bet. And that's one of the things I'm working on right now. I finished the Old Testament, and in the New Testament, the last introduction I wrote was the book of Colossians. So I'm up on Colossians if you have a question about that. Yes. Well, we'll have to consult with the governor. No, of course. Californians are considered rational human beings who can also study. And we would be glad. In fact, I've already talked with my colleague, Brother Jose Uribe, and I've given him a CD that contains the entire course in Spanish. And it has a manual for the students, a manual for the coordinator. It has all of the key to the exercises. It has the blank test. It has the key to grade the test. So, well, I'm glad you asked that. I do. And I left a CD with the English version with Stan Clark. What happened was several church leaders who support Hispanic Works learned about the Spanish course, and the people told me, said, we've done this course that Dan Coker wrote. They'd call me and say, Dan, we'd like a copy of that course in English. And I said, well, it doesn't exist. And it was interesting how they reacted. Most of them said, what do you mean it doesn't exist in English? How did you get a Spanish copy? They just assumed that you translated from the English copy. That's what's done usually. I said, I wrote it in Spanish. That's how we got one. You mean you didn't translate it from English? I said, that's exactly what I mean. They said, well, are you ever going to do it in English? And I said, I will when I'm convinced that you gringos will use it. I said, but you haven't convinced me yet. Well, five couples from the Dallas-Fort Worth area came to me and said, will you please write that course in English? And I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. You want to study it? Yeah. I said, I'll start writing it in English. And we'll meet at our house on Sunday afternoon for 2 hours every week till we get it done. It'll take about a year, give you a little time off for Christmas and Thanksgiving and all. I said, and if you keep up with the work and do it right, I'll continue writing it. The minute you quit, I'll quit. And I'll know that that's a sign not to bother with you gringos. Well, they did an absolutely outstanding job. They were a delight to have as students. They devoured it. And some of them now are coordinators with their forming groups. So, yes, it is in English. And Stan is the man with it. And, if you finish it, we'll even give you a certificate to hang on the wall. Nobody will pay any attention to it. So look here, we got a certificate signed by Dan Coker, the executive director of the Instituto Latino Americano de Estudios Biblicos. And I'll say, yawn. But I think it'll do you some good. Anything else? Yes, sir. Yes. Well, those elders, I do, since they're my elders, but I mean, they're not actively directing this work. What they agreed to do was set up a special account. It's North Davis Church of Christ -ILEB. They have a special account. They put the check in every month. And a young woman by the name of Janice O'Neill writes checks and pays bills on it. And they do that as a favor to me and a favor to those who donate. Of course, this church sends one in that name, and I put it there. You don't need the tax write-off. But an individual that gives a check would like to have it count as for his tax write-off. And so they set up that account, you write it to that church, and you get a receipt for it. So they do it mainly as a favor to me, and they do believe in the program. Of course, that's why they're doing it. But they didn't have any part of saying let's set this up, let's do this. I just said I'm not in the mood to set up a 501c3. let's do it this way. And they said, okay. Anything else? If you talk with the check writer here, each month they send the check, they make it out to North Davis Church of Christ - Elib and mail it. They mail it to me and then I give it to them and they put it in the account. And I'm getting rich off of it, by the way. I'm glad you. I'm glad you asked me such an easy question. Well, we're all thinking about that a great deal. Your question is good. There is apathy. There is sort of a crumbling of some of the congregations. I believe it's a combination of things. It usually is. I think that we live in a time where people demand instant gratification. And if I don't feel really good and gratified about what I do each Sunday, I'll do something else. I think that's one reason why we see places like Joel Osteen's church in Houston, Texas, just grow. And it amazes me because I'm such a Bible-based person. I've listened to his sermons and I haven't heard a Bible sermon yet. The church just grows like crazy because it's a feel-good deal. A lot of people are looking for that, but that's just one of the problems. I think another one rests squarely on us. I think that we do not challenge our people enough and give them enough meaning and purpose. I think that we ought to provide, but also insist on biblical study, for instance. This church, it's not an option. We study the Bible. You'll study the Bible, and we expect you to perform. Now, I didn't bring it with me, but I'd like to mail you a little thing I did on seven dynamics of church growth that I've identified by looking around, and that might help some. I believe that you need a combination of things in order to make a church grow spiritually and numerically. And I believe that if a church grows spiritually, you can't keep it from growing numerically. Even if you hire a Texas preacher, it'll still grow numerically if you have that spiritual growth. So I think that some of our own positions have worked against us, things that are good within themselves. But I like what Klein Payton said one time in my presence, the founder, of course, of Sunset School of Preaching, which is now Sunset International Bible in Sibby, isn't it? He said, "Brethren, we're so autonomous, we're practically anonymous." And I believe that he put his finger on something. It's just, we just refuse to think very big, and we're so afraid that something is going to encroach on our autonomy, which in itself is not a biblical concept. The word doesn't exist. I don't even think the concept exists. Now, it makes good logic that although I belong to the Coker family, I don't call my sister in Sacramento and ask her what I should feed my children for breakfast. But I never quit being a part of the Coker family. We teach one body, but we don't act like it. We criticize the Roman Catholics because they have one body with a bunch of heads. We draw grotesque, stick figure things on the board to illustrate the error of the Roman Catholics having a series of heads from Christ all the way down to Francis. But what is more grotesque than one head and thousands of bodies? And that's what we do effectively sometimes. We say that we're one body, but we act like we're, that each one of us is an autonomous body. Now, we're not an independent body. We're all members of one body. Now, I know, like I said, in this location, when the wisdom of God, and we see the Apostle Paul, you know, installing elders over that church in order to guide it, and that's the only thing that makes any sense. But that does not remove the fact that we're members one of another and we're one body. And I think that we've been so guarded that we maybe we've lost our perspective sometimes. And I believe thoroughly in challenging the members. Now, we expect you to do it. And if you don't do it, we'd like to hear why you didn't do it. I believe that with all my heart. The teachers in all the universities I attended, and I attended several, they kicked me out of one, I'd go to another. But the teachers I remember the fondest memories are those that demanded a lot of themselves and a lot from their students, and where I learned something worthwhile. And I was telling some students here a while back, talking to me, and they said, "Well, who's the committee on your master's degree at Abilene Christian?" And I said, "I'd be glad to tell you that. J.W. Roberts, Lemoyne Lewis, Frank Pack, and Neil Lightfoot." And they said, "Wow, those are the hardest teachers ever." And I said, "That's right. That's right. And those are the ones I wanted. I didn't want to have a free ride." And I think sometimes we've been so dedicated to trying to make our members feel comfortable and unthreatened that they just become complacent and we don't get going. We need to challenge people. I don't read where Jesus told his disciples, "Hey, disciples, follow me. We're going to stay in the best hotels in Jerusalem. We're going to, each one of us is going to have a gold MasterCard. And we're going to dress to the nines and impress these people. And you don't dirty your hands. You are my disciples. You're somebody." He said, "Yeah, come with me. You heard of foxes and birds, haven't you? Well, they have it better than you're going to have it." And they turned the world upside down. Okay, I've preached enough. Pass the collection plate. Yes. Well, yeah, I had the great privilege of going and being one of the featured speakers at the 50th anniversary of the Churches of Christ in Guatemala. And it was a glorious, glorious occasion, because when I left there, we could count about 1,250 active members. And 33 little small groups, most of them small, some of them are pretty good size. But we didn't get to count the people baptized, but those who were, you could count on in the churches. And when I left and others left, we pretty well turned it over to the Guatemalans, who were on fire because they had studied the word and they had tasted the joy of getting out and teaching others. And so 50 years later, they reported better than 40,000 active members. And they had rented the National Gymnasium downtown in Guatemala City to have a 2-day celebration. Brother Jerry Hill and I were the featured speakers. Jerry one day and I spoke the other day. And they had 11,000 seats, the bleachers and then chairs on the basketball court floor, had 11,000 seats. And in every session, they were all full and people standing in the aisle. And it was because those people were challenged from the very beginning. We taught immediately, "You are now God's priests. You're God's people. You're chosen people. You need to be busy about doing his work." And we said, "Come go with us. for them to go with us. And when these new churches opened up, and then they took the baton and they ran a lot better than we did. They outdid us, and of course that's what we wanted to happen. And there's an excitement about learning and the excitement about sharing the word. There's a hope there that they never had before. I think we're just too secure with our own abilities. And of course, we realize every once in a while, as we look, take a good look at our country, hey, we've seen the best years go by. And the only thing that's going to keep us going is to realize that the Lord is in control. And for us, everything's going to work out no matter what, because He's never going to forsake us. But I think that I'm a living example of growing up in a pretty smug environment and thinking, I pretty well handle this. I'm realizing more and more that I can't. And we need to be known as the people of Bible study, the people of prayer. And I don't hear us being characterized that way very much. To our shame, I speak. But the people in Latin America, they're people of prayer and they're people of action, and that's why they're growing big time. Maybe they'll send some missionaries to us one of these days. Well, thank you for your question. Yes. Well, okay. Good question. By far the largest segment to which we appeal are young people. We get some older people, families and all like that, and we always are very happy to get settled families, but there's a lot of young people who are looking for things. They feel like that they've been sold a bill of goods by the traditional religion, and they're looking for something. And they have a lot of good questions. And so there are a lot of them coming to the Lord. Okay, thank you much.